will be our last, and it turns out I think 10th, lesson on prevailing moral winds. We got. I'm consenting to be recorded. I gave consent. I haven't had to give consent on Zoom before. It's weird. I don't know where this is going. So last week we talked about some of the nature of the attack. So as Christians, as the church, as a Christian family, your own families, our families, you know, these different dimensions, how do we understand what's coming at us? And we've talked for weeks about, you know, the kind of sexual stuff with the LGBTQ, all that's kind of sexual aberration, and again, an attack on nature, an attack on what God has created. And we've talked a little about that, and then for the last few weeks, let's see if I can get this thing going, there it goes. For the last few weeks, well, we talked more about racism and racial problems, and how the gospel gets into all of that. God addresses all of those things, sexual perversions, lifestyle perversions of all sorts, right, how we live, which includes kind of how we view other people, how we view ourselves, and as I mentioned, I think racism, you're going to have a hard time looking at the Bible and saying racism itself is a sin, but racism, as we might look at it with an even-handed way of looking at it, as opposed to this, you know, particularly defined by anti-racism and so on. Anyway, that's full of sin. There are sinful aspects in it, including pride, right, and hatred and other things that the Bible does say. These are sin. They come together in maybe a racist point of view on things. So that's something that I'll mention, that the folks in the world who are looking around trying to tell us how things are and how they ought to be point out real problems. And it's not a faithful Christian response to ignore that. Okay, it's not a faithful Christian response to something to say, oh, well, you're just an atheist, oh, you're just this, you're just woke, you're just a social justice warrior, I don't care what you have to say. Okay, that's not a faithful response. We do need to care what people say, and particularly when they point out problems, although sometimes the problems they point out are kind of problems of their own making or other things as well. So more on that, I guess. I'm just trying to kind of pull this a little bit together as far as last week in the four ways we looked at it were how these attacks come in individuals, how they come in families, how they come in society generally, and how they come at the church. Okay, so that's what we discussed last week, those kind of four dimensions of that and responses to them in those different capacities. This morning, a quick word on necessary categories, and then talk about three necessary categories, sin, ethics, and eschatology, as far as understanding not only the Christian, kind of fulsome Christian message that we have from the Scriptures through Jesus Christ, but then what these knockoffs had to say, right? What they're after in these categories as well. So very quickly, on necessary categories, we talk about worldview. What is a worldview? That's something that gets a lot kicked around a lot. We can go to worldview academies and study worldview. It's kind of a bit of a buzzword in the past, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years, maybe longer, I don't know. But it's something that people like to say. And there's worldview, apologetics, right? Defense of the Christian faith based upon worldview, which is kind of rooted in Van Til and presuppositional stuff, which is something I have been into. And so what is a worldview? Yeah.
Say it's like a standard or a lens through which you see the world and how it works together.
Right.
How it should react.
So we have a lens through which the world's viewed and understood. Okay, and that's, I think, that's a good start at it, because it's certainly that. But you might say, somebody's just, I'm just negative. I just kind of believe the worst about people, and that's my worldview. I view the world through the lens of my negativity and distrust. You say, okay, well, that's okay. That's a lens you're viewing through, but that's hardly a worldview. Right? A worldview would be something more of an encompassing philosophy of life and everything. Right, not just kind of an angle or a way about being, right? So do you understand the difference? Like, so a real view of the world would have some sense of what is the beginning? Where does this all come from? Right? If a worldview doesn't offer some kind of basis for understanding where we come from, it's a deficient worldview. It doesn't give what we need to have from it. Okay? Just those very basic questions. What are we doing here? How did we get here? Where are we going? What's this all about? OK, Okay, these like fundamental questions people will ask about life and reality. Worldview deals with those fundamental things and brings them together one way or another, into, ideally into some kind of coherent whole that becomes the lens through which everything is understood. Right? Not just my personal proclivities of this or that, but a whole sense of the of reality through which I understand and deal with life. Okay, that's what he, so worldview is more fulsome and bigger than just a way of viewing world. It involves more. Yeah, Bob.
How do you account for cognitive
Great question. So Bob's question is like kind of looking around the world, say, at just different societies, or you know, say, okay, well, how do you deal with Islam as a cultural reality and force? Obviously, it's not biblical, it's not faithful, it's not Christian, but it does have a view of the world, a fulsome view of the world, Islam. Islam is a genuine worldview. Right? It has all the things we're talking about. The question is how to explain that. And my answer is we're made in God's image, every human being, and as we come together made in God's image in society, we're going to have certain values that are pushed into law or pushed into the way we operate and tell other people how to operate and all this other kind of stuff. And so societies build up around what are partial truths and partial falsehoods, right? As fallen humans try to do the best they can to get along together or to kill those guys over there because we hate them or whatever, right? That all goes that direction. So I'm not sure that I even necessarily understand the question to answer it more than I have. But I'll take Alicia's. Maybe you can double back on it, tighten it up, or help me understand it.
Okay.
Yeah.
An important perspective is that every single person has a worldview, whether they're conscious of it or not, or whether they've specifically thought about it thoroughly, as you're describing, or not. Every person comes from a worldview. So you've got slightly different worldviews in virtually kind of everyone. I mean, we may have similar because of our background and the things we've thought through, and people in China would have similar. But the guy down the street would have a different worldview than I do.
Sure.
You don't have to go as far as China or Islam to find a different worldview.
That's helpful.
It's all around us.
So we all individually kind of operate in this, but then societies come together around certain assumptions or beliefs that they hold. And that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about this morning is what's within this framework of woke or social justice or whatever we're going to call this thing that's going on, what is sin? That's a necessary component in a worldview because everyone looks around and says, well, something happened, right? This isn't all right. There are problems in this world, and we have to account for that. And ethics, you know, right? What ought we to do as people? People are hopelessly ethical, right? There's no way out of it. God's made us in His image, and we're ethical, moral beings, right? So all that's going to come into play with how we view sin, how we view ethics and eschatology, supposing we get there. Darlene.
Well, I think it's so important to give that thought to a worldview, because if you look at the cultural revolution that we talk about in relationship to woke, you know, saying maybe in the 1960s or something like that, where things really started changing a lot, I think we tend to think of worldview as like a religion or like some kind of philosophy, but there is such a thing as humanism. So now you take this religion that's atheistic or whatever, and that forms the worldview that they're looking for.
You bet. Absolutely right. And so when we're dealing with this kind of thing, we're definitely jumping back to the 60s and before that, but there's a definite move forward in the thought life and in the actions and in the way this thing's addressed in the 1960s. Good. Bill.
Christian worldview, there's Islamic worldview, there's anybody else that, like Alicia said, worldview, and it's kind of like trying to define government. There's not just government, there's personal self-government, there's federal government, there's all kinds of government.
Sure.
So there's all kinds of worldviews. I think you're getting at driving a particular...
Kind of, yeah. So I'm trying to pull together a contrast between Christianity, which we can all, I think, safely assume we have a basic understanding of Christianity and the way we're supposed to view all everything through it. Okay, that's kind of what we're doing here all the time. And then compare that to what I'm seeing coming at the church right now. We'll call woke, we'll call whatever, social justice. And just kind of compare them. And with in mind, this beginning part, that they are deficient all over the place. Right? The worldview actually is quite spotty. And where the spotty, where it's like, oh, we don't really have anything to offer, what do? What every person does, they steal from somewhere else. Right? They take it from somewhere else. They're like, ah, this doesn't make sense, but this does. Oh, good, this fits in. Right? So you got this smorgasbord of things brought into a way to understand the world. A lot of it's like, hey, we don't believe this Christianity thing. Rule God out, rule all the stuff out, but then 5 steps down the road, got to bring a bunch of that back in to make sense of what's going on. Okay? So Christian apologetics should notice that when we're dealing with these deficient worldviews and say, hey, that's great, but you're taking it from us. You just lifted it from the Bible. Do you have a justification for that? And in particular for one might say, especially with materialists, naturalists, the value of human life is just assumed, outside the womb, of course. In the womb, it's totally expendable. But outside the womb, the value of human life is assumed, right? Virulently, the humans are, when they want to, right? And so you start poking and say, well, why do humans have any value? In this scheme of the world that you propose, of just matter and motion, maybe, where do ethics fit into it at all? Where do they come out other than human conceit? Right? We make it up. So those are the kind of ways in which we'd be dealing with worldview and talking about it. But just note this, that there are certain things that kind of flow out of their fundamental commitments to things, which we'll see. And then when they get out there in the real world, they got to steal from other places to fill in the gaps. So look out for that as we move through these three categories, which are, we've talked about other parts of it, and this is the best I can do. So number two is sin. Sin. Okay. Now, on the one hand, I can think of a humanist friend of mine, an atheist, materialist, who says, I don't believe in sin. He rejects the doctrine of sin, but then everything he does is based upon some kind of concept of human sinfulness and how it has to be remedied. Right? He's hopelessly a moralist who says he doesn't believe in sin, yet he functionally, that's what drives him. Is the sin in himself that he's fighting, really, and then what he sees in society. That's what he's after. So to deny sin is pretty amazing at that point, because it really does, it's the fuel in his tank. So question, what is sin? As a Christian, from the scriptures, what is sin? Y'all should know the catechism. Yes, Claire.
Any lack of conformity or transgression of the law of God.
Boom, baby. Okay. So any lack of conformity unto or transgression of. So not doing what God says or breaking, right? Saying, doing what he says not to do. The law of God. Okay, so in Christianity and in Scripture, right, Damien? Right, Lauren? You stop in the middle. It's like an Oreo. Anyway, sin is against God, right? Sin is primarily against God. It's defined by God. I called your name so you'd start listening and quit talking. If I need to call him again, I'll do more. So sin is primarily against God. It's God-oriented, and then it falls out in human terms and messes things up down here too. Okay? That's the Christian understanding of sin. It's an offense against God and his law. Okay, so we'll put that down as the Christian doctrine. What is sin within a woke mindset? Have you figured that out from what we've been talking about? And maybe you're looking around and poking around trying to understand this stuff. What is sin? And I put quotes because they wouldn't use the word sin typically, but they definitely have a concept of what is wrong with you in particular. What's wrong with Whitey? What's wrong with society? What's wrong with all this stuff?
Whatever they want it to be.
That's true, but I think that's always the case. But they have specified certain things. I think, okay, well, in the mindset here, the social justice kind of mindset, there are definite offenses.
Okay, so
the second one, the second one's closer to it, right? So intolerance is only defined in terms of people that things they want tolerated and not, right? So there's that kind of self definition. It makes it all kind of crazy to begin with. so I have power and privilege definitions here, a few pages, and this gets at, I think, the doctrine of sin from a woke standpoint, right? This is what sin is oppression and privilege. So oppression is interesting, right? And then we have this, the the kind of like overlayered deal of intersectionality. Like, so what kind of person are you, and what oppressions are you personally a part of, right? Well, if you're not white, that puts you on the oppression scale. Good. You're not white, because if you're white, you're an oppressor, therefore evil. And if you're not white, particularly if you're black, somehow, you're oppressed, and that's good. That gives you moral high ground, right? It gives you experience, which is the basis of knowledge. That's it. It gives you experience personally that you can speak and put out there, and that is knowledge, right? The oppressors, on the other hand, their experience is not that valuable, evidently. So they can white-splain, they can tell you what they think, but that's all just dodging. That's all, like, you know, we might say, you're making excuses for your wickedness. You're making excuses for your sin, right? You've committed adultery, thinking in like a Christian counseling, and you're making excuses because you're blaming it on your wife or you're blaming it on something else. That's how they would take a white person saying, well, yeah, but I have some black friends, we get along great. That's just more culpability. You're just saying the things they're expecting you to say, and that's just what white guilty people say anyway. Right? So there's no way out of it. Right? And so when it comes to this thing of sin, they're going to get you. They're going to show you how you're sinful, and they got lots of ways to kind of wrap it around to do it. And all the ordinary things an ordinary person would think to say, but I don't think it applies, because they already thought that one out, and just saying it is enough to show you're guilty. Okay, so damned if you do, damned if you don't, damned no matter what if you're white. Okay, if you're white, you're damned no matter what. If you're straight, you're damned no matter what. Right? If you're anyway, all the normal parts of life, those are all oppressive, and you're oppressing minorities in that, whether you think you are or not. Okay? So that's kind of this real virulent doctrine of sin that we see. That's just, I'm just kind of trying to poke at it. It's much bigger than I'm getting at now, Alicia.
But it's beyond that. It's not just where I say the ideology, because if you are a black person who speaks against this, now you're in the same category as the whites. So it's not just skin color, it's also anyone who disagrees with their agenda. Agrees to disagree with their agenda is sinful.
That's exactly it. So internalized oppression.
Yeah.
Internalized oppression is somebody in one of these subgroups, one of these oppressed groups, that doesn't think correctly. Okay. They haven't been trained to think correctly, and therefore they are part of this internalized oppression. They've internalized whiting. They've internalized this cisgendered, heteronormative kind of thing, right? So, and they've embodied that, and they're kind of part of the enemy. They're like the enemy inside. They may have black skin, they may be homosexual, they may be transgendered, but they're not thinking correctly, right? And so our friend Bruce Jenner down there is one of the examples of that. He's not thinking correctly. Because he understands what it is to compete as a male and to run around, I guess, as pretending to be a female. And he says, no, this is crazy. This doesn't work. Right? So therefore, he is anathema within the community, because he's not holding the orthodoxy, though he is the head figure of it. Right? He's the one that everyone sees and knows. But so you'll find that. And if you look back at kind of revolutionary things like this, just go read about the French Revolution. You'll turn your stomach. You'll hate it. You'll never want to go to France. But you'll see how this kind of thing, this ferocity, always turns inwardly. Always turns on itself. The people that were movers and shakers 5 minutes ago are now the ones who are guilty. And that's just how it goes. So watch that happen. You don't need to celebrate it, but you might celebrate the fact that it's tanking this whole kind of, you know, movement that's all around us that we're trying to figure out. Yeah, Kim. We're getting there.
It's just soulless. Yeah.
They have to
turn on themselves because there is no way to fix it.
Yeah, that's so under number 3, letter C, their ethics note, on the basis of this ethical system offers, what basis does this ethical system offer for forgiveness? And the answer is none, really. If you're really getting this stuff, like some woke stuff, then you would despise your whiteness. You would despise all of the whiteness that's built into the laws around us, into the institutions that you support, even tacitly, right? And you would stop white-splaining. You would stop all this other stuff. You'd just bow down at the foot of blackness and listen and learn. And that's as good as you're going to get, whitey. Serious. That's it. Right? That's the idea of redemption out of this sinfulness, out of this racism, out of this homophobia, out of this cisgender, whatever, the normalcy. There isn't a way out. It's just kind of this process that you kind of learn more and more, and that's the best you're going to get. So and there's no basis for the theology for forgiveness at all. There's just damnation. There's condemnation and tear down. That's the driving force here. Do you have a comment?
Wouldn't there some of the problem of the, you talked about them, first you're the head guy, then you're off with your head. That's the French Revolution. It made it a bloody revolution. Some were against it. Pretty soon, everybody's head got chopped off.
Oh, it's like a black hole of violence. It's crazy. And you know, Robespierre is he's the great progenitor of this period of, I'm trying to think what they call it, the Reign of Terror, right? The Reign of Terror, and he's the one that gets sucked in and loses his head just the same.
Yeah, one more next to the B, I want to get tattooed on my hand for vaccinated. I'm going to get a placard to hang WASP right here.
WASP. Don't get it mixed up, WASP with a W on your hand. So just for George W. 43. Okay, so let's keep moving. Letter C and number 2 is important. And this is where I started the whole thing and where I really want to put the emphasis, is that there is a true destructive power of sin in life. Okay? And as there's a noetic, we call it noetic effects of sin on the mind. These people's minds are warped. Right? They bought into a system and it's contorted their thinking and their lives are wrapped up in it and they're lost. Okay, sin really is doing damage to these people's lives. And it's one thing to kind of sit back and talk about it theoretically and say, oh, this is crazy in here, and we can kind of look and understand. Okay, good, we need to do that. But these people, especially as they come into our lives, as we have an opportunity to minister to them, whether in families, or neighbors, or friends of the church, or whatever, that we are dealing with real broken sinners. Sometimes they lash out. Right? They're angry and they're broken. They lash out and appear, what they think is their enemies. Christianity. Okay, deal with that and expect it. Overcome it with love, Christian. Okay, you've been given the Spirit of God to overcome these things. So, that's our thing. The sin is real. This destruction is real. That's a place to meet them. Right? That's a common point, I think, where we could actually have the conversation of the real destructive nature of sin in their lives. And they may see it as systemic or it's all out there. That's like one of the problems of it. Right? Christianity, the main problem with sin is where? Right here. Right here. I'm the main problem with sin. I'm the chief of sinners. I'm the problem. And as soon as it's like, no, they're the problem, all bets are off. It's lost. That's not what Christianity has to say. The problem with sin is the world, the flesh, and the devil. You're never getting away from your flesh. You're the problem. And once you're, if you're continually working on your own sin, you're going to be humble and in a place to be humble with others who also are struggling with sin in a way that they don't even know. They're being tossed in the waves of the ocean and don't even think they're wet. Okay, that's what we're dealing with. So don't forget that. The destructive power of sin is obvious and is really vicious. As I say, vicious in reality, in the realities of the lives of the people we're talking to. Okay, ethics. This is kind of this whole thing is ethically driven anyway. What ought to be, how we should treat people or say or do. Okay, so ethics. What should and should we not do, say, or think? This is obviously tied into sin, right? Because if you're not supposed to do something, you ought not talk, think, act a certain way, then that's going to be a basis for saying, well, you shouldn't have done that, and you did, therefore that was wrong, which is like sin. So before we get to the ethics, and we'll just quickly do that and get down to eschatology, which we haven't talked about. Okay, we have talked about ethics a lot, but not eschatology. So then, how does a Christian know how to live?
Scriptures.
That's it. The Word of God. How's the young man to cleanse his way? By taking heed unto thy Word. Right? How shall the young direct their way? By the Word of God. God Himself has spoken and given us direction. We look to the eternal, unchanging God who's revealed Himself in Scripture and in Jesus Christ preeminently and say, God Himself will tell us how to live. Okay, we have the law of God, and that's we're bound to that as Christians. How does woke or anti-racist or social justice, how do those kind of people know how to live?
Whatever the wind
changes. That's just it. Whichever ways the winds are blowing on this one. And they're blowing hard, and they move around fast. And if you find yourself like poor Bruce Jenner, you attacking one direction, you might find, oh man, the wind's just changed, and now I'm on the outs. Right? Now my head's going to roll. And if it goes French Revolution ways, it will. They will. Blood will be spilled. We kind of think in this little bubble, but I don't know. My familiarity with history is enough that makes me leery of people and the veneer of society. And when that veneer comes off, it's like, oh, you need to die and all your friends and family too. Say, no, not here. I hope not. I think so. Anyway, how does it? Whatever wins are blowing. Whatever Kimberly Crenshaw has written last, right? Whatever Ingram S. Kendi just published. This is how we know what's right. Right? So there's that kind of thing that goes on. That's my assessment of it. Maybe someone else has a clearer insight into it, but I don't think so. There's no abiding law where we can say, yeah, okay, for thousands of years, we can say, you shall have no other gods before me. You should not make for yourself a carved image of anything. Right? We have this established law of God that was at one point new. Right? At some point, Moses brought it down, right? But even when it was new and brought down from the mountain, it wasn't new. It was established on the character of God going all the way back. And so I think there's a continuity of that. That this sort of thing, if you look at it in those terms, it's just a wind. It's a breath of a wind that we're kind of in the middle of, and it'll be gone. And in 20, 30 years, they'll look back, and the historian's like, hey, that's a weird thing that happened. You know, this kind of woke thing. Check that out. There'll be a point of this scholarly interest in 150 years. Right? That's maybe it. But in the meantime, it does real damage in people's lives. It really convinces girls that, hey, we need to get together and go get our body parts changed. Because that's the thing that's going on. That's the wind that's blowing right now. And Christians need to have something to say directly against those kinds of problems in our neighbors, our friends, our families' lives. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's kind of like what's happened to feminism, right? It's like gone. It's so last year, right? Because now you can't be a feminist. You can't stand up for women's rights because you've got this whole transgender thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's gone. You can't do that.
And isn't it amazing that, like, you know, whatever, 0.0 whatever percent of the population is transgender can somehow put 50% of the population down? I dare say if women stood up and said, get your male nasty self out of here, they'd go. They'd get out of the bathrooms. They'd get out of the dressing rooms. They'd get out. If women just stood up and said, no more, get out. But men can't even do that. Right? Men are kowtowed, and we're all weak and wimpy. Anyway, the whole thing is crazy. We're just blowing. Dude, the Islamists have to be looking at us going, easy prey. Easy prey. Look how they kowtow to the liberals that don't even have power. They don't even have guns. All the guns are conservatives, but we're all... Anyway, the Islamists have to be looking at the West saying, the time is soon. The time is soon. Which is, of course, horrifying. If you have any sense of that. But I don't think it's out of the picture. Because of how weak we are and how we're just pushed around by everything. Right? Americans are that way right now. And unfortunately, the church is that way. Right? Getting back to our thing last week, of so many churches just bowed down to this stuff. This is now justice. This is now the righteousness of the church that we are anti-racist. So we move around. We deny, therefore, the Lord who's bought us and what we're to do as a church to proclaim Christ and live in Him. I saw a hand. Darlene,
yeah. Yeah, I'd like to push that out just a little bit further because I believe that this is really cosmic. It's a cosmic battle.
Absolutely.
The devil comes in different forms over the years. Now, for our time, this is him here. Because if you listen to him, if you watch somebody who's gone through one of their trainings, that whiteness is all, you know, you're the devil yourself, it's almost like a religious experience once they get the idea, oh my goodness, I've been this oppressor, you know. But it's bigger than just an idea that's floating through. It's the enemy coming at us, and he's erupting in this spot, in this year,
yep,
as woke. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was in homosexual marriage. Then it was in, you know, whatever you want to name it. But, and so I think when you, for me, it's helpful to look at it that way, because when you talk to somebody who's caught up in it, you would talk to them the same way you talk to somebody who's a Mormon or somebody who is a Muslim, or, you know, where they've got caught in a religion that has a lie in it. And you have compassion for them, you have love for them, and you try and get the proof out to them. You know, it's very crazy making, but I don't think it's much different.
Good. I think you're right, where the folks you're talking to probably are kind of trapped in the bubble of thinking, right, that's there. And again, it's not very, a lot of ways, it's not very good thinking. It doesn't take very long to, like, say, well, what about this? How's this thing? You know, we all have inconsistencies, right? No question about that. But I think this whole worldview, if we call that of woke social justice, the thing pushing right now, has so many inconsistencies. That's something there. But when you're talking to somebody, I suggest instead of attacking, which is easy to do and kind of what they're prepared for and what they think you're going to do anyway, Whitey, and conservative or whatever they think of you, right? Identify things. Say, you know, I do think, for instance, when people who have power set up laws, they set up laws to retain their own power. Is that deniable? I mean, do you honestly think that that's... You know, so I think that's part of the systemic stuff. They're like, hey, listen, this stuff works its way into institutions and into laws and into codes and things like that. Is that the truth? I think it's undeniable, right? How do you address that? Okay, well, that's a different thing. It's hard, right? But to say that systemic racism isn't a thing, I think it's kind of deny the nature of reality that we live in. I think it is a thing, and it's always been a thing, and it probably will always be a thing until the resurrection, how to deal with things like that, right? Are there really issues in policing? I don't know what you think. I think so. Right? I've had enough minority friends to tell me, yeah, I knew when I come into town, I'm getting pulled over every time. Because they think I'm Mexican. I'm half Chinese. They think I'm Mexican, so they pull me over. That kind of thing. It's like, okay, nothing Montesano, Washington up there. A little potent. So are there issues with policing? Are people, yeah, of course, right? So just to say, oh, these are fine, all these guys are a bunch of crazies, doesn't help. It doesn't help anything. It's not honest, and it doesn't help. And it won't get you into connection with that person when you say, I agree, I see these same problems. And then question, well, why it's a problem? That would be a way to go. Well, why is that a problem? Of course it's a problem because they're black and you need to protect blackness and blackness is special. Or we'll say, okay, well, I agree we should protect, but why? Right? So that would be a way into trying to address a problem that you see together as a problem, but you're coming at it from a Christian point of view wondering why they're upset about it at all. Right? Then you can't get them to come out and say why they're upset about it. Anyway, I think that's a better way to have a discussion than to say, oh, this systemic racism thing is all a bunch of hooey. It's right on, you got them on the defensive. Right? They're not going to want to listen to you. They're not going to care what you have to say. But if you're working with them, identifying issues, and then saying, well, but as a Christian, I come this way. Where are you coming from? How do you justify that? Might be a very enlightening conversation for you and them. So that's all to say, yeah, they're trapped within this kind of worldview or this limitations of thinking, and so are we. Right? So are we. We're trapped with our limitations of thinking as well. The difference between ourselves, by God's grace, and other views of the world is God has revealed himself. The infinite God has revealed himself personally in Jesus Christ and in the Scripture, and we're on that. We're on that tip. Okay? We mess things up, we're inconsistent, we're sinners, but we look to the eternal, unchanging God who's revealed himself in redemption in the God-man Jesus Christ. Okay? That's kind of what we bring to the table. So you can't bring all that to the table, all your Christian stuff. Say, sorry, I don't get to do it any other way. I don't get to come to the table of discussion like a secularist because I'm not a secularist. Okay? I'm not. More on that right here at the bottom. Eschatology. 5 minutes. So where is all this going? Right? Well, eschatology, of course, is the study of end things. Right? Where does it all go? What's the purpose? So there's this protology. Where does it all come from? That's one of the questions that worldview is going to seek to answer. Okay, well, where do we come from? What's the origin of all of this? What's the nature of all of this? And where's it all going? Where are we headed to? So where is it all going? Is there a culmination or climax of all things? Is there an end? Now, in Christianity, put there, Christian eschatology is rooted in extra-creational realities and hopes. What do you suppose I meant by that? I wrote that and thought, I wonder what they'll think I meant by that. So I'm asking. Anyway, so Christianity, Christian eschatology, so Christian hopes for the future, of the world and beyond as we think about it. These eschatology is rooted in extra-creational, beyond creation, right, beyond the physical created world, extra-creational realities and hopes. What do you think I'm talking about here? Amy, what am I talking about here? Sure. So you just chalk it up to that, something as simple as Jesus is going to return and usher in a new phase of this whole thing, right? It's not just this world moving along that we're concerned with. It's within the broader context of eternal God who created this thing and is working it and is going to bring it back into himself. And so there's this much bigger context in which we're thinking of eschatology and the world as it is than for sure. I mean, like a kind of secularist, limited view of the world and how they fit into it. Right? So God is the source of all things. For of him and to him and through him are all things. Okay, that's the basis of Christian everything, including Christian eschatology. Right? God's doing this, and it's in a much bigger context of God himself. not just the created realities that we see around us. Yeah.
Do you mean like supernatural? Is that what you mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Because like the angels, all that coming, the second coming is all created. So I'm just
sure. Yeah, yeah. So there was the created realities in which we operate are in a bigger, broader context that gives them the meaning and understanding that Christians have of them. Okay, where the limitation of the secularists. Now, the word secular means of this age. That's what it means. Okay, of this age. In other words, the age to come, Christians. You can fancy that if you want to. Okay, but we're worried about this age, these things, these people, the way things work and are now. Okay, we're cutting, self-consciously cutting off the supernatural, and certainly the age to come or some kind of eschatological consideration, and we're going to work with this age now. We're going to focus here now. Does that make sense? That's what secularism is. And so at that point, it's the kind of de-godding of everything to bring it as a part of this age, and it kind of has a naturalism and a materialism usually behind it as well. But that's, so if we talk about secular, we're talking about really the cutting off of the age to come. The limiting of our understanding of this world to this world only. At this time only. Apart from that broader Christian understanding of this world that I was just talking about. Okay? I hope that makes some sense. Because it puts woke eschatology into very limited categories. We got to deal with this age right now, and the moralism that we have of what should be done, how you should talk to people, how you should view yourself as white or whatever else, or cisgendered, or all these other ways of kind of categorizing people. All that works its way into making paradise here, making it work here, right? And this goes back certainly to Karl Marx. Right? You know anything about Marx's eschatology? And Marx is behind so much of this, right? His thinking is kind of is underneath a lot of this. And so it makes you want to get a hold of Marx better. Not easy to do. But anyway, what's the Marxian eschatology?
Economic type of oppression.
Right. And so in the process then of that, you got the workers of the world uniting, overthrowing, probably violently, almost certainly violently, those who hold the power, the oppressors, in economic terms, because Marxism is economic in its fundamental orientation, where this kind of this social justice stuff takes the same dynamics and starts applying them in other areas of life as well. That's kind of what's going on here. But in Marxism, right, the business owners, those who own the means of production, need to get put down. That means production needs to be taken into the hands of the people, right? The proletariat is the name for the Marx gives it anyway. And then once they do that, they'll have a workers' state where the power belongs to the workers, the means of production belongs to the workers, and you enter into utopia. It's a utopian state. That's the view of Marx. That's what he wants. That's what communism historically has been driving at. It's paradise here on this earth. There is no paradise outside this earth because this is all we have. So they're bound to this, and that's where we're going. Where Christians have a bigger picture, we're still bound to this, but it's within a much larger picture and understanding of reality, not just bound into this age. So there's a massive limitation of thinking and action. That actually makes it more virulent and overpowering because they're trapped in this age. And that's all they have. So you get things like equity as a goal, right, which is outcome-based. Everyone's outcome is the same. You get that in this kind of social justice mix. It's like, oh, that's their eschatology. Right? That's what they're aiming at. That's their goal of life, is this kind of equality of outcome, which, of course, is, from anyone's standpoint, kind of madness. But anyway, that's enough said on that. I think I'll field some questions. It's clear. Kimmy got something.
I was just wondering if you figured out how, I mean, I get that equity is their utopia, but I haven't figured out what they think they have to do to get there. Is it just a switch of oppressors and oppression? Is it, you know what I mean? I can't figure out.
I have the same question with Marxism.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I don't get it, because Marxism, again, is based on this Hegelian notion that you have the thesis that develops the antithesis, and then they fight it out and develop this kind of new thesis that develops its own antithesis, and there's this dialectical thing that works out in history until it finally ends. It brings about the synthesis that is the synthesis. Okay, that's Hegel. Right? And so Marx is drawing on that, say, okay, well, just put it into economic terms and means of power and production and stuff like that, and eventually this process will work into some kind of synthesis that really is a utopian synthesis. Now, how that goes with this, because there are a whole range of problems and issues, you know, when you get intersectionality, it's like you got 400,000 categories to keep track of. How does it bring about equity? How could you ever measure it? How could you do any of that? It's all rhetoric. It's all BS and rhetoric. As far as I can tell. But again, I'm no specialist. Granted to you, I'm no kind of specialist. But from my standpoint of reading it, it's a vain eschatological hope. There is no traction or definition of how to get there. It's just a way to manipulate people now. Power politics now. Okay, that's Marxism top to bottom, by the way. Yeah.
Now you get, if you look at the people who, for instance, started the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, not only are they radical feminists, then you turn around and you add, you know, they can make traction because they can get onto a race thing, and yet they're still out there buying expensive houses. So, I mean, none of it makes sense.
Oh, and the thing is, that makes perfect sense.
Well,
right? I mean, it doesn't make sense if you're looking for consistency from them, but it makes great sense if you know sinners are sinners and they're going to do simple things. And that's not just them, it's us too. Right, the sin thing is something we all have to deal with. And again, the closer we focus on ourselves and say, hey, listen, I get it. I get sin. And then come with humility into that situation, the better off we're going to be. Noting, again, that the destructive power of sin is obvious and really vicious. Okay, so coming with that in mind, understanding that we're dealing with sinners in a world that's a fallen world, and they're dealing with a mindset that's a fallen, perverted mindset. But that doesn't mean everything in it's perverted and wrong. And so we can find things in it and have some common ground there, I think, is a place of having a discussion. Yeah.
And don't you think we can change the word white to Christian? I mean, this is a subliminal hatred of Christianity.
For certain.
For sure. I mean, everything is, you know, they hate God because everything's not equal, everything's not fair. And to me, they're just brainwashing people that white is wrong, but really it's Christianity.
Sure. No, Christianity is definitely on the list. At the end of the day, what Darlene says, what you're saying, this is a spiritual war. We're in a spiritual war. This is a spiritual battle. And that just how things are presented isn't necessarily what they are. What they are is war on Christ and his kingdom. We're not going to have this, you know, read Psalm 2. That's what's going on. But here's the thing, and don't forget this, Christ wins. Christ wins. He knows how to take out his enemies, and he uses his church to do it, and it will occur in time. This is just one more enemy that has to be toppled as Jesus works his way to utter dominion and complete dominion. In the meantime, though, it does damage. In the meantime, though, we struggle with it. In the meantime, though, it hurts our families and the church and all the damage that this kind of thing does. And, of course, the driving feature in all of it is envy. Right? This whole thing is driven by envy. Other people have things that you want, don't you? Let's get them. Let's take their stuff. Let's take their power. Okay? I think that's really, if you're scratching at it, I think you'll find that every single time in these folks. So watch out for that. And watch out for it in our own hearts as well. The politics of envy. Hey, all you have to do is get political power and you can take their stuff. Whether, again, it's with power or goods or whatever else. Or the microphone so you can tell everyone how they're wrong and what to do to make them right, if that's even possible, and so on. Anyway, enough of this. I think we're over time, and probably enough of this altogether. Though, for particular people that have, you know, you're struggling through issues on this, let's keep talking about it. I don't want to keep doing an education hour. I think we've done enough to try to understand a Christian position to take on this. And again, what we have to offer is the gospel, reconciliation that God has wrought in Jesus Christ. That's what we have to offer, not telling them how they're silly. Right, and so on. So with that in mind, let's pray and we'll close it out.